So Pip has a new place. Whoa, that was a lot. Some heavy peas. Pip has a new place, and we're doing some training to see if she can stay on it. So if you hear us live training Pip, that's what's going on. She has a special bone. She can only chew when she's on her place.
Yeah. And she's enjoying it right now.
Yeah. I took it away from her because she was just running around with it and put it on the table. And then we turned around and she was standing on the table with her bone hanging out of her mouth.
All four legs on the table. Mm-hmm. Also, disclaimer, I am still a little under the weather. So if you're like, woo, Madison, this voice today, that's why. I'm a little sick.
Like Phoebe when she tries to stay sick in Friends so she can have her sexy singing voice.
I mean, I have to say, sometimes I do enjoy my... like deeper,
it's more sultry.
Nasally voice. It's also easier on my vocal cords.
Yeah,
you don't get that vocal fry.
I know. You know. I don't know if I left that in a cold open when we talked about vocal fry for a long time. Oh, or if I cut it out. Okay, I have another disclaimer.
Okay,
I need to make two corrections to last week's episode.
Oh no,
about common sense.
Man, you know that's a good episode when we've got corrections.
Also, like, look at me saying I was wrong.
There you go.
The first one. And I don't think I made myself clear.
Okay.
But also, our friend Kim, keeping us honest, when I talked about turning left, how people here turn left into the left turning lane and how that drives me bananas.
Yes.
It is legal.
Yeah. Okay.
She sent me the rules.
Thank you, Kim, dear listener.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
And I know it is legal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just that it shouldn't be the default. That's what drives me crazy. Like, when people do it, when there's no other cars on the road, mm-hmm. and it looks like they're going to T-bone you. And I'm like, you could have just waited 3 seconds, sir. That's the first disclaimer. So,
okay.
It is legal to turn into the left-hand turning lane, but you are not supposed to drive in it. And some people here will turn left and just drive in it until you let them merge.
When you say the left-hand turning lane, like, just...
The center lane.
The center lane.
Yeah,
I call it the chicken lane.
Because
it's like if you're too chicken to turn all the way into the other lanes, you can just sit there for a little bit. It's also like
where... I thought you meant because people play chicken in it. Like,
well, I mean that too. It could have many different meanings. Because like maybe a chicken is trying to cross the road and you just end up right there.
And they just stay in the
chicken lane. Yeah, it. I don't like it when people drive in that lane.
No. The second correction we need to make is that while Google might not have said that my dad was right to call a dork a whale penis, we had your dad confirm that colloquially,
yes,
dork did refer in
the 80s. To like the genitalia male genitalia.
Of potentially any mammal.
Yeah.
Maybe not only whales.
Specifically a whale, but... Yeah.
So that was the second correction.
Also, I'm just realizing now that you went to Google and you typed in whale penis, and that scenario to me is quite humorous.
I think the sentence was, is dork a word for whale penis?
I love it. Oh, my word. That's wild.
I guess I should have gone to Urban Dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
That would probably have been more accurate than the Google. So, okay, those are my corrections. Do you have any corrections you need to make?
You know, there's probably some things that I said that
but
were wrong,
no one
but
I
can't think of anything right now.
All right, are you ready?
I sure am. Let's hop into
okay.
it.
Whenever you just said, let's hop into it, I imagined us like in Mary Poppins when they hop into the chalk drawing.
Welcome, children. I am your Mary Poppins for today.
Well, does that mean me, Dick Van Dyke? What's his name?
You can, I don't know. You can
I don't
want
to be him.
You can be one of the kiddos that
okay.
I'm leading down a magical chalk land.
Yeah, you can be my Mary Poppins.
Ooh.
This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 107, we're talking about bad art and the blank page.
Oh, yeah, that's a good title.
Thank you. Hey, and it's apropos that we talked about Mary Poppins and chalk drawings because we're talking about bad art and blank canvases. And they hop into a world that was hand-drawn, I think, by Dick Van Dyke.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's what happens in the movie. He's like drawing on the sidewalk.
Oh, I like how they did it in the remake.
I haven't seen the remake.
Oh, I think you would enjoy it with Probably. Emily Blunt. Well, then I won't tell you, but they don't remake it like scene for scene, and they don't do another chalk drawing. But what they do instead was really smart, I think. I think that you will like it. Okay, bad art and a blank page.
Yeah, which we think, we had a little discussion about this, and we think that they're related. So here's what's going on. I think I mentioned last week that I am in the process of learning how to paint with a palette knife in this particular style of painting.
I think it's what you said you were learning, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I knew, because of all of our podcasts and the ways that we've talked about creating, that when I sat down to make my first painting, it wasn't going to be good. Because it's my first try. But I knew that, like, there wasn't a way that I could get around, like, there wasn't a way that I could do, like, quote, like, a dry run without all of the materials, without, like, paint and canvas. Like, I had to have all of those materials present in order for me to actually get practice at the art.
Right.
Like, there wasn't a way where I was like, oh, I'm just going to, like, cheaply, like, finagle a way to, like, get around this. No,
that's
I had
the first barrier into things. You can't just kind of try it.
Yeah, there's, like, no, quote, safe way. You just have to jump in.
Well, there is. It's called make do, but that's not available to everyone.
Yeah, that's true. But most of the time, you have to shell out for the materials.
Yeah.
And I think, like, when I say bad art, I think there's a way that that can be expanded into just, like, trying something out for the first time. It doesn't have to be art. Sometimes you have to, like, kind of, like, put all of your eggs in a basket and be like, this is what we're trying, and there's a good chance it's not going to work the first time.
Before we get too deep into
this,
there's two things I want to mention. Well, two other podcasts. We have not talked about being a beginner since episode 2 and 3.
Really?
I know we've mentioned it.
I mean, we mentioned it.
But as far as the titles go, and our titles aren't always the best. I try to give them subtitles now, too, on what we're talking about. But episode 2 is You Gotta Start Somewhere. And episode 3 is How to Be a Good Beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's sprinkled in there in a lot of our episodes as well. But that was we haven't talked about it since then.
It's been a hot second. And I think we've learned a little bit since then about being a beginner. The unique thing about being here at Make Do is that we interact with a lot of beginners, and we've been trying a lot of new things. Just that's the nature of our job. It's never the same.
I do want to ask, because you know sometimes how we start having conversations and then we realize after the conversation is over we were having a different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So from the beginning, I want to know if you think I don't think that the bad art idea only applies to being a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought it up specifically because you were starting something new.
Yes. I mean, I think in past podcasts, I was talking about a dress that I was working on, and I was like, or no, I talked about a bad dress that I've made several times. That was like gray and orange.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I was like, ugh. But I was working through some emotional stuff, so I needed something to work on, and I made that bad dress. So, so even though I've been sewing for like close to 16 years, I still make bad dresses. Yeah.
I think it's like sometimes when I'm writing, I like my handwriting. Mm-hmm. I think I have nice handwriting, but sometimes I have really bad handwriting. And it's like, where is this handwriting coming from? And I just have to get it out of my system. And that's even my own muscle memory. It's like it just needs to get.
Exactly.
I think we can have a lot of empathy for beginners that are creating bad art because we expect that because they're beginners. And it might be more challenging to accept our bad art as we're moving out of being beginners.
Yeah, you may assume, well, I've been doing this for years. I know what I'm doing. But there can still be the days where, for whatever reason, because of you or outside sources, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to say, when I say bad art, like, you know, we talk about people not putting down the things that they create. When I'm describing my pieces as bad art, like, it's not what I want. It's not that it's not that I'm saying it's ugly or that I'm bad. It's not the goal that I'm getting at.
Right. And that is helpful. And bad is subjective.
Exactly. I mean, Richard came up, like, I've finished them, and he comes up and he goes, oh, those look really good. I said, I hear you. I'm glad that you think that. It's not what I was going for, but I knew that this, that I needed to get that, like, that bad art out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, even in the process of me doing it, I was like, I don't like this, but I have to keep going because if I don't, I'm not going to get better. Like, I'm not going to, like, get to the other side.
I think that bad art is part of a good process.
Ooh, okay.
And so when we can name it or know it's going to happen from the beginning, like when you went and got all the supplies, you're expecting that the first one you do not to be good, right?
Yeah. Let me tell you. So I have this idea in my head of the painting that I want to do. I didn't start with that painting. I bought two cheap canvases for like $3 just so I could start like practicing something. And I thought, oh, I might end up with a small canvas I can hang up in my wall. But I set my expectations low because I thought there's a good chance I'm just going to have to like scrape the stuff off of this canvas and figure out another use for it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So what I mean by bad art is a good process is that you recognize that it is a step in getting to where you want to go. And so if you just don't do it because you think what the first thing you make is going to be bad, you're not, then you're really not going to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. I've accepted that it's going to be bad, but I've also accepted that that's not the end. I can do better.
Uh-huh.
And I think that has come from other places in my life where I have like, maybe where I've had like less trepidation about a process. So like in sewing, when I'm like, okay, I can, if I work hard enough at this, if I practice this enough, I'll be able to get to a point where I can do that skill well. But like with painting, it's a little bit harder for me because that doesn't come naturally to me. Like,
right.
Like the techniques and things don't come naturally to me.
Because you're a beginner, more of a beginner in painting that than in sewing.
Mm-hmm. So, but I've used my past knowledge of like, hey, I worked really hard at this skill, even though I made some bad stuff, and I can still like, so therefore I can like transfer that over to the painting that I'm trying to learn and push through and hopefully get to a painting that I like.
Yeah.
Or that I have in my head.
I want to go back to that definition of bad art.
Yeah.
And I think that this applies to where it fits into the process. I appreciate what you said about that you're not labeling or putting a qualifier on the art itself, being good or bad. You are just recognizing that it's not what you had in mind.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot in the people that are coming into the studio, whether it's that they're looking at the sample or they just have something in their brain that they're wanting to get out. But you can't both learn a new process and create that very specific thing that's in your brain, like the technique and the skill. And then the imagination and the creation of the thing are two separate components.
Yes.
I think if you can kind of let go of what you have in your mind, of what you're wanting it to be, then that step, that bad art, might not actually be so bad and could later on send you in a new direction and it could actually be good in that new direction.
It's an adjustment of expectations, right? Mm-hmm. I'm lucky in the pursuit that I'm in right now that it's not my job to learn how to do this style of painting. And I have the time and a little bit of money to throw at this. Like, this is going to be a hobby for me. But this is something that you need to take into consideration when you are doing something new, or if you are in the process of something, you may not have the resources to like have the time and like put the resources it takes into getting those like bad tries out of the way. Like that may not be in your wheelhouse right now. And so you just kind of have to accept, okay, maybe I need to like save that for another time.
Well, you have to find ways to get the bad out.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe you practice the bad on cardboard boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you're practicing your technique and you're building your skill on a something that doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. But so I just wanted to put that out there that doing something for the first time is hard, and it takes, or, you know, even if you're just in the process of something, in the creative process, it's going to take time and effort, and you need to take that cost into account.
Yeah.
As you're going through that process.
Pip has decided to trade her new place for her old chairs in the window so she can get a better view, I guess. Okay, anything else you want to talk about the process that you, like the story of you creating your...
So the result was two canvases that actually I thought I was going to like one more than the other, but I ended up getting the wrong ratios of like paint and modeling paste and things cracked, and I didn't like the colors, but I also knew that I was working with a very limited, like a limited supply of materials. And that first time made me realize that I'm going to need probably at least 3 or 4 more of those not so great, you know, pieces before I'm ready to try out the artwork that I would like to get to.
Are you, is this the one where you are using like piping bags and?
I'm not using piping bags right now. I'm just playing around with a palette knife.
Oh, okay.
And I thought I could rely on my cake decorating skills to kind of help me with messing with it. But something I didn't take into consideration was like how important the materials I was working with. And so because of that, the integrity of like my painting is flawed. Mm. So, and I was trying out some new things. I'm like, well, what happens if I add this kind of paint and I do this? Like, will this work? And so it was a lot of experimentation. So now I know that doesn't work. And I didn't ruin the painting that I wanted to do. So I'm good with that. But yeah. I do have 2 canvases now that I'm going to have to like probably scrape stuff off of and probably find another use for.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
And also building up texture on canvases is like a cool thing.
It is really cool.
Paint over it. Just spray paint it, then do something else with it.
Oh, yeah. I'm very much excited about it.
Is this something you're going to work into a class at Make Do?
I might. I want to find ways to like get kids into other ways of painting that go beyond the paintbrush. Like we do the ish painting with our itty bitties, but there's something about working with large volumes of paint that is just very satisfying for kiddos. But I need to find a way to do it that is that fits with Make Do and like the style of class.
Right, right. I like the kind of the 3D-ness of those kind of paintings or the fact that things can look more abstract and less realistic, you know?
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of frosting. And my mom, she would always, when we were younger, she would make us birthday cakes. And I loved watching her pipe icing. And I love like clothing that has like fake food on it or like those iPhone cases that look like there's icing and then they like put stuff in them. I love that. And so that style of art kind of lends itself to like, it looks like frosting on a canvas.
Yeah, that's fun. I don't like icing.
That's all right.
I like minimal icing.
I mean, you like eating icing, right? But what?
No.
That's not what I meant. I meant, do you like looking at icing?
Yeah. Okay. It is pretty.
Yeah.
But it could also be puffy paint or like,
yes.
It, you know, I see what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about the, just the texture aspect of it. And like, it looks fluffy.
Yes.
It looks like a cloud made solid.
And it's got so much color to it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool. Anyways, off our tangent of fluffy color.
Yeah, that's okay. I wrote minimal things down because I wasn't exactly sure what direction we were going to take the podcast. Yeah.
Well, okay. So we talked about bad art. Let's talk about the blank page.
Okay.
When we're presented with a blank canvas or an empty Word document or your boss has just given you a new assignment and you have no idea what to do with it.
Does your boss do that?
Well, okay. All right. So as you giggle, we're starting a spring break camp. We've never done it before.
Yeah.
And I stared at a blank Excel sheet thinking, what do I do?
Yeah,
what do I call this? So,
yeah. I think that these conversations could stand alone, but I think they also are very connected because a lot of times what keeps the page blank is being scared of the bad art.
Amen.
And wanting to just avoid that step. And so we'll just go back to my mantra for this episode. Bad art is part of a good process. And sometimes, not sometimes, the majority of the time, you have to just dump it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Onto the blank page, onto the canvas, onto the email draft, and then craft it.
You got to break some eggs to make an omelet, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I just think about like how many people are like, well, I don't want to start, or I'm not, you know, I don't want to participate in this because I know I'll be bad at it.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't want people to hear like bad art is part of the process and be like, yeah, but it's always going to be bad art. I want to give you hope that it's not always going to be bad, that like, as you learn and grow, it's part of the process. And it may not reach that point where it's like exactly what's in your head, but you may find that you still like it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And so, what's in your head might solidify into something different anyway. Like, I think a lot of times whatever's in our head, if you really try to hold it in your head and think about it, it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
It's ephemeral.
Ooh, I love that word.
So it isn't an actual thing anyway.
Yeah. It's much better to have the physical thing in front of you, right?
Right. And bad art, what we're saying is bad art is part of a good process, mm-hmm, that is taking you somewhere else. We're not saying, what? Bad art is the process.
Yeah.
It's inevitable, but it doesn't have to be the end.
Yes. I want you to accept, mm-hmm, that first time is going to be a struggle, or, you know, there are going to be times where you do make some bad stuff, but it's not the end and it's not a signal of you're getting worse or it'll never get better.
Well, and sometimes your first one's really good.
Oh,
and
so
then, mm-hmm, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm a natural at this. And then you try a second or third or 10th one, and that's when the bad comes.
So this happens to me whenever I have to make two of something.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's baking or sewing, I'm like, ooh, first one looks good. Okay. It's because I was, like, learning and taking my time. And so the second one, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. And then it's not as good.
Also, this happens in the watercolor class. If you have a practice sheet, and so you're just practicing.
You're just kind of, like, swirling about doing
stuff. And then when you go to do the real one, it's not as good. I think it's because you're more relaxed in the practice one, too, mm-hmm, because there's not the pressure of, this is the blank page that is going to hold my art.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not putting that sort of pressure on your practice sheet.
Yeah. So that's why I didn't put a lot of pressure on my first two canvases. Because, mm-hmm, I was like, I mean, it'd be cool if these go up on the wall. They may not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
One thing that this is, that I have to remind myself about this every time I do it, is writing. I'm a good writer. Mm-hmm. I can communicate through writing, but being a good writer takes me a long time. And I keep thinking I should be getting faster at this, and I really don't. Like, it just takes me a long time.
Yeah, I think George R.R. Martin will tell you that it just takes a long time to write.
Or you just never write the book.
No, I mean, because you have to get things out on the page, and perhaps your process as a writer is that you got to get it out there. You got to find, you lay all the pieces out, and then you're able to switch and turn it around. Maybe, uh-huh, you need to talk to somebody about it. Uh-huh. And that's just the process.
Mm-hmm.
And if you accept that that's your process, then you can give yourself the appropriate amount of time to write.
Well, and saying things is easier for me because it doesn't have to make complete grammatical sense. You can infer a lot through changing the tone of your voice or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you're writing, you're having to do all of that for the person that's reading it. And then you don't know if they're going to read it how you are picturing it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I, like, the storytelling emails and stuff that we send out, yes, they just always take me so long.
If our listeners don't get those storytelling emails, how do we get hooked up with those storytelling emails?
Good grief, I'll just post a link in the show notes.
Because, I mean, I've enjoyed these past few stories.
Yeah. don't want them to be too long. Mm-hmm. You want to hold people's attention. Sometimes I feel like I'm trying to do too much. Also, I don't know any other way, so.
Extra is just the way here. Yeah. That's how it is.
Yeah. So every time I know, okay, today's an email writing day, it pretty much is going to take me the whole day. Because, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, because it requires perfection. I mean, not perfection, sorry. You want perfection. But what it requires out of you is a lot of, like, honing.
Yeah.
And so you got to put something on the page.
Yeah.
Can't just stare at it. Which is what I ended up doing for my spring break camp. As I was planning this, I was like, I've never done this before. So the first thing I did is I went and Googled some other places. And I was like, okay, they have a schedule. I'm going to make a schedule. Mm-hmm. So I set out some times. And I'm like, all right, I've got a schedule. I need, like... We like to brand things here and name things. I was like, I need like a theme. And so I sat down with Joe for a bit and I was like, what's the theme? And you were giving me some advice about, you know, sometimes it's hard to name something if you don't know what it's going to be.
And vice versa. Sometimes you need the name so that you can create the thing. Sometimes you need to create the thing so that you have a name.
Yeah. It was a tough go about it, but I went on and I was like, fine, I'm just going to start planning out the week. And then... voila, the theme or like the way that I wanted to present the week just kind of came to me. And I was like, oh, thank goodness.
I know. It does. It does.
But and the only way that that could happen was because I started writing things down. And you can always change something or go back and redo it.
Yep. Bad art. Good process.
Yeah. Very rarely is something set in stone. But even if, let's say, you know, you only get one first impression. Uh-huh. The reality is that you still can't put like so much pressure on yourself because you're going to have a first time somewhere, whether you like it or not. And like it's going to happen.
You also can't be everything that you are at one time. Mm-hmm. So your first impression is not a complete picture of you either.
Yeah. So you've really got, I mean, in part of all of this, when you're figuring out what to put in like, on a blank page, or if you're trying to create something new, just have a lot of grace for yourself, man. Be accepting that what you're probably going to put out is not going to be your best. Like, it's not going to be your best.
And it doesn't have to be the final. Like you said, it's not set in stone. Man, especially now, because it's digital. So sure. Easy to change.
Absolutely.
Do you have any more thoughts? You ready to do tips?
Oh, let's see. Yeah. I can do some tips.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like this has been a tips sprinkled in anyway.
We've had a lot of, definitely a lot of good tips. I would like to point out that if you want to dive further into having grace for yourself during the first time, like when the first time you're doing something, or, if you're just struggling to put something on the page, Brené Brown's podcast, The first episode is called The Effing First Time. It's her first podcast episode, and so you can go and listen. And I took some of her tips from there. So if you want to dive deeper, you can head over there after you finish listening to us.
To our good friend, Brené.
Yeah, I do appreciate her a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, start us off with tips.
All right. This one I've stolen from Brené Brown. It's going to take twice as long as you think it's going to take when you are making the thing for the first time, or when you're in that process, a new process. It's going
to... Or when you're making a thing you've made 100 times.
Yeah. Just realize...
It's going to take long.
Yeah. I think a lot of us underestimate like, oh, well, I've never done this before, but it should be fairly simple. Just go ahead and set the expectation that it's going to take twice as long, because you're having to learn either a new process or like it's not streamlined yet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit you yet, because a lot of times when we're doing something new, it doesn't quite fit the way that we do things. So we may have to change some things up. So give yourself twice as much time as maybe you think.
You also don't know where you can cut corners yet. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about that in our Becoming Intermediate podcast, which I'll link in the show notes too, because that is a good thing to let you know, like when it's time to move beyond this first draft. Let me take that back, because this whole conversation, some of it is about being a beginner, because your thing,
yeah,
beginner. But then also, I'm not a beginner at writing emails. So.
No, but we already know from experience that you know you may think that taking an email takes like might take me like 30 minutes to write a really good email. You have to look back and go, does it actually take me 30 minutes to write an email? No, it doesn't.
It might take me 30 minutes to finish the email once there I've spent a few hours like, on it.
Yeah, percolating on it.
In the back, with it up in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, say yours again.
It's going to take twice time. As long.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you have to account for, this is just a bummer about creativity in general, if you have to clean something up.
Oh.
Like if you have to get stuff out and clean it up. Another thing that's hard when it's you're kind of the first runaround is that you're not familiar with all of the things. Like you mentioned, it might not be, I forgot how you say it, within your mode of normally how you work.
Yeah. Like it's someone else's steps that you've heard or something like that. And you're like, you have to like tailor it to fit yourself.
Yeah. But then you might also have to take time to learn just the technique of things like how do I hold this rotary cutter? Like, what am I supposed to do? So that can all take time too. Okay. I'm going to say this has to do with time too. It's not a race.
Yeah. Most of the time, like you will have a deadline, but like if you're working at it evenly, you will probably do fine.
And so we see people being creative next to other people, right? Because we're teaching classes. And one of the top things that people will put on their entry survey, like I send a survey out to anyone who's taking a class, quilting class for the first time, so they can say concerns that they have, or, you know, I can just be sure to address the things people want to learn. And most people are afraid that they're not going to finish on time or that everyone else is going to be faster than them. And that is unnecessary pressure when you already are dealing with the fact that this is new. It's going to be bad art, potentially. I have to remind myself this is a veteran storytelling email writer. It's not a race. I'm not even competing against how long did the last email take me. I'm just doing the one that's in front of me. So you're not in competition with anyone else, either in the room or in your own head, about how long it takes you to get the thing done.
It also doesn't mean, like, especially when we're talking about a creative class here, you being efficient at creativity is not the point.
Right, right.
Like, it doesn't mean that, oh, well, someone can sew their seams faster than me. Oh, well, they're more efficient, so that means they're better at creativity than me. That's not how it works.
Because creativity really is the exploration, right?
Indeed.
And you don't need to be efficient at exploration. It's the wandering.
You know, I think about kids, and because I was a substitute teacher for a while, I think about kids in the classroom where they're like, oh, so-and-so finished first. They're really smart. Maybe not necessarily. People who go back and check their answers might get more things correct. You know, it does. Just because you're faster doesn't mean that, or more efficient. Like, what are you going to move on to now? Like, now you have to sit in your seat and wait.
Right.
Or if you finish up, if you finish up your quilt here at Make Do quicker, well, that means you have less time to spend with the people that are here.
Yeah, or you leave and then you don't get to be in the group photo.
There you go. It just goes to show that, like, dagnabbit, I had a thought. It has left me in the brain fog of my illness. It just disappeared.
It disappeared into the sultry sound of your voice. Oh. Okay, what is your next tip?
My next tip is that the first time that you do something probably won't turn out great. Also, if you've been doing something for a while, expect that occasionally one of the things you put out ain't going to be that great. Like, sometimes I try out a new recipe. Or, like, I'm, you know, kind of like winging a new meal. And sometimes they're not great. And Richard has to be like, this is fine. It's not as good as your other stuff you normally make. And I'm like, you're right. You're bound to have a dud every once in a while.
Right. Whether because of either preference or the fact that you just did it. Not great.
Yeah. I mean, it can happen at work or at home. Or, like, you could be, you know, such an emotionally stable and healthy person and still occasionally, you know, interact with someone and you're like, oh, I definitely said the wrong thing there. I messed up. It's just gonna happen. So just accept the fact that you're gonna have a dud every once in a while, and there's gonna be more of them if you're trying to pursue a new activity.
Mm-hmm. And if you're pushing the bounds of your creativity, even in a craft or technique skill that you're good at, then if you're trying to get out of the box, you're going to stumble while you're like climbing over the
just
box.
Expect it to happen. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you're bad at what you do or that you're never going to be good at whatever you're trying, you know, to do that's new. It just means that you're human as part of the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cut the comparison. Yeah. So this could maybe go several ways, but we'll see where my brain takes it. It could be that you're trying something new, like you with your frosting painting.
Ooh, I love that. Sounds great, frosting painting.
And you are seeing all these inspo pictures and you think, okay, I think I can do that. And so you do it and it's bad. And then you just throw it out the window because you're comparing your first one to their 100th one and to the one that they liked enough to post.
It's true.
Right. And so you cannot look at your first draft or your bad draft or however you want to call it and compare it to someone else's final draft.
Yeah. I mean, if you're writing a book and you're comparing it to someone's book that it's like their third book in the series and they have an editor and other people and they've been writing for years. Like, of course, your first draft is not going to look like the other one.
Yeah.
Just be real about that. And the problem is that there's not a lot of first drafts out there for us to compare to.
And I've heard people who are in the book writing space talk about the importance of a good editor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times a good writer is good because they have a good editor.
Yes.
And so if you are just writing on your own and don't have an editor at all, then you already are... that other author already has a leg up on you because they have other eyes on their work that are making it.
A more like visual way to think about this is if you've seen like clips on like video clips on YouTube of people who have like recut trailers or like movie scenes to like totally change the tone.
Oh,
they haven't reshot anything.
Yeah.
They've just recut it. And that's what a good editor does is that they can manipulate and change the tone. They didn't change the actor's performance or the shots. Uh-huh. They just moved things around, and yet it can change all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So
it's a good thing to remember when you're watching reality TV too.
This is true. That you could pretty much edit to do whatever to make things whatever you like. Mm-hmm. So that would like for the creative community, maybe your editor is just other people you're in community with who are also creators. Mm-hmm. People who have feet on the ground of like, yeah, I'm trying this new process. Mm-hmm. And you can talk to them. They're like, yeah, I totally get that. Have you tried this?
Yeah.
Like maybe you just need a community of people, whether it's online or in person, that you can chat to about the new thing that you're doing.
Yeah, the outside perspective is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. So I like that. Okay. Let's see. Set your expectations accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You may have been doing this 500 times. Still doesn't matter. You're going to mess up sometime. Don't expect that just because you're an expert now means that you're never going to make any mistakes. Or like if you're trying something new, just realize first few times are going to be bad. First 10 times could be bad.
Uh-huh.
It's just the deal.
Yeah. How many times did it take Edison to make a light bulb? Like a lot.
Yeah, you know, after he stole it from Nikola Tesla, you know, like it's always going to be complicated and difficult when you're trying to innovate and bring something new to the table. It can also be difficult if you're trying to follow something step by step.
Right.
It had to be brought to my attention that like I, as a person, I am really good at following instructions, which I thought was fairly simple because things are written out for you and you just do A, B, and C and you're good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people out there who struggle to build IKEA furniture or who struggle to put together a recipe. And it's because following instructions, that's a skill. It's something you have to hone. It's something we teach children to do. Like you have to be taught how to do it.
That goes back to our common sense episode. Yeah. Like, it seems like common sense, you just follow the instructions, but there's so much more that goes into it.
You might have the instructions. You might have the schema or the little idea folders already in your head that help you follow those instructions. So,
yeah. I think what's tricky for people about IKEA furniture is it's just pictures and no words.
You'd think that it being pictures would be helpful because a lot of people, I think about this when I'm in the classroom. A lot of kids struggle more with word problems and math than they would the numbers because the words mess with them.
Yeah.
Even so, like with the IKEA furniture with the pictures, sometimes people can perceive the pictures in different ways.
Yeah.
They don't have good spatial awareness. They can't like perceive how that picture relates into real life.
Right. I have a friend from Dallas named Monica. I don't know if she listens or not. Hey, Monica, if you do.
Hey,
yo. She, that was like her job is manuals.
Oh, or like writing manuals or creating them?
I don't remember and I would say it wrong, but something to do with the process. Mm-hmm. And so when I was first working on Make Do and I had some instruction sheets for different projects that we did. Mm-hmm. And so I would send them to her to look over and be like, does this make sense?
That's fascinating. You know, someone does have to write the manuals and you have to think like really clearly about like how can like someone misinterpret what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wild. And people still do it all the time.
Yeah.
If you've ever built furniture or tried to put together some Legos or
yes,
whatever it may be.
Okay, I have two more tips. I think they're kind of the same, so I want to talk about them together.
Okay, if that's okay with that's you. Cool with me.
Well, they might sound like opposites, actually.
All right, hit me up.
So one is to start small, like start little.
Like my little canvases?
Yeah, and then flesh it out.
Okay.
So you might want to make a big canvas.
Yeah, yeah.
But creating on a big canvas, that's more blank space you're having to deal with, right? And so really starting little and then expanding from there is a good approach. That could also look like picking one fabric that you like and then adding to it, like letting it grow from the one.
Instead of trying to pick eight fabrics to
all
go together.
Once. Yeah. It could look like starting with, obviously, like the idea for an email, the story we want to tell, and then following it down a few different paths and seeing where it goes. It could also be starting, like I'm thinking about when if I am designing a mural for a space, like the space might be big. So I can't necessarily start like in just a little corner and draw it out, but I can start with big spots, like a few big places.
Like you've broken it up into chunks.
And then expand from there. So that could look like an outline. I used to write papers like this in grad school. I would write an outline and then I would turn like that one word into a sentence. And then I would put bullet points under that sentence. And then I would turn those bullet points into sentences. And then I would drop in a quote. And I would really write my entire paper from an outline just by fleshing it out. So that's one approach, is to start small or start, maybe small is confusing because if I was talking about like the big wall, but start minimal. Start with just one or two elements.
Figure out how to break it up. So maybe you write an introduction. Maybe that helps center you versus like doing an outline or something like that.
Or your conclusion. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to end? So that is one approach. And then potentially an opposite, I'm not sure yet, you can help me decide, is to almost do the opposite.
Okay.
Dump it all out and then move it around, cut and paste, edit, erase, delete, bring it back.
So like, and you just write a bunch of stuff out and then you're like, okay, it can't stay like this, but I like this, this, and this. Okay, I can turn this one into a point, this one into a point.
Yeah. Or if you're picking fabric, you just look at the wall and you just grab everything you like. And you're not thinking about, does this go together or not? if you're doing a mural, you're just scribbling everywhere, mm-hmm. And then you edit back from there. So sometimes the problem is we don't know where to start, and so we have to start small, mm-hmm. because we only know one or two things. Sometimes the problem is that we have so much in our brain we want to accomplish that we're trying to edit while it's in our brain before we ever put it out, and that isn't helpful either.
Absolutely. So I would think I really like this tip because I have transferred this over into my emotional health. Mm. So sometimes it's really hard to figure out what you're feeling if it's all in your head. But if you start like, this is the like, if you have a lot of stuff and you're trying to edit it down, specifically, like let's say you're in relationship with someone and you're trying to communicate how you feel in a way that they can actually hear. Mm. It's hard to edit down your big feelings into something that can come out of your mouth that right. they can hear. So putting like dumping it all out into like journaling, this is why your therapist tells you to journal, is because you're essentially dumping out all your emotions so you can sort through them and be like, oh, this is what I'm actually trying to get at. So it like helps you to edit and organize things in a way that's you can like hold it and like give it to somebody else or like communicate it to somebody mm-hmm. else. So I really like that tip. That's a good one.
Journaling is really hard for me because I am trying to edit. It's that first step that's hard for me of just dump it out mm-hmm. because I'm trying to edit as I go because I want it to be like poetry or
oh,
something.
Sure.
I don't know.
There's something about like history has done us mm-hmm. in because we're there. I've seen TikToks of like, I found a diary of a housewife from 1957 and you're like, ooh, what if my diary was found? Ain't nobody going to be reading my diary mm-hmm. Or like my journal or whatever. You have to realize it's for you. And like, I've had to get over the sounding like dumb when I write.
Oh yeah.
I also don't spell very well. Mm-hmm. I rely on spell check. So my journal is like full of spelling errors.
And you write it. You don't do digital journaling.
I don't do yeah. digital journaling because it helps me to connect my body with my emotions uh-huh. at the act of like actually writing it out. But that has also helped me like get all of it out there because I'm holding the pen and I like the feeling of the pen on the paper.
Yeah.
So it helps me to like flow all the stuff.
Yeah.
But then I can like kind of go back and go through and I'm like, oh, this is what I need. Like, this is what I'm trying to communicate. Okay, and now I can go and tell people how I feel.
Or you see something come up that you didn't realize mm-hmm. was a theme. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens when we're talking. So coming up with podcasts is another episode of like a blank page.
Yeah.
Whatever the equivalent of airspace is that's blank that we're mm-hmm. filling now. We'll have a little idea of, because we don't talk about things. We'll start to talk about something. You're telling me about your painting. And we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah,
stop
talking
about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that on the podcast. But then because we're out of the moment, we can forget what it was we really wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then we just go down a completely different way, or something else comes up that we didn't realize was like under the surface of mm-hmm. the topic.
Yeah. So I like those two, the dumping it all out and editing it mm-hmm. or starting in smaller chunks mm-hmm. in places that you know you can handle and go from there.
And it might be that both of those things work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need to do one thing and sometimes you do another. Or if one isn't serving you and you're stuck, try the opposite. Or in different crafts, you might need to approach it from different ways.
That's true. Just try it out. See what works. And that goes into the like, it's going to take you longer because you also have to figure uh-huh. out what method is going to work for you. All right. Love those tips. Last one is just do it. Like jump in. Like don't be afraid of making the bad art. It's going to happen. You're going to have a first time at some point. I think this is a tip that I said when we're trying something for the first time. Either you try it for the first time or you never do it.
Right. And what's more important, that you don't make something bad or that you experience something that is in your brain and you want to do?
Man, I look at those two canvases and I'm like, this looks like something that will end up at a Goodwill that no one wants to buy. Uh-huh. Like, that's what these remind me of. That is true. But also, it is a stepping stone that's on its way to something that I know is going to be better. So I just needed to get that out. I just had to try. I had to do it first time. I couldn't be afraid of like, oh no, what if this looks like, you know, a third grader painted this? It's just, It just had to be.
Yeah. I have two big canvases on my wall right now that I was going to do one thing with them. I laid texture down on them. I painted one left-handed because it was during my, like right before my shoulder surgery. Yeah. It's been hanging up on my wall, 95% finished. I sketched out the second one. It's not painted yet, but if you look at it close, you can see the pencil lines. I think I'm going to paint over the first one, paint it white again.
Mm-hmm.
Like just redo. You know, as I've lived with it, I think, no, this isn't what I want. Also, I think I want to do a big mural on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hung that vintage wallpaper. So it just feels too busy there. And maybe I want something more simple, or maybe I want it just to be a solid color, but with mm-hmm. the texture. I haven't decided yet. But I think I'm going to spray paint that.
Yeah. So you can always go back and cover over something mm-hmm. or reskin something. I save some of my old projects that like didn't turn out well because I might be able to redo them into something else. Your first time may be a thing of like it happens and you can't go back and, you know, reuse it for something else. But what made that first time useful was that it got your feet wet.
Right.
That's what makes it important. Right. That was its use. Those two canvases were not a waste because it was useful in me starting something.
Yeah.
Just like if you're a master at your craft, whatever that is, and you make a dud, it's like, nope, that was useful because now I've learned things from it and I can go and not do that again.
Also, because you're dealing with 3D like texture,
mm-hmm.
I still can't imagine that they're completely useless.
They're not. Like, but there's just things about it where I'm like, I just don't like this.
Right. But like, I'm like, what if you got some high gloss black paint
yeah.
and like spray painted them glossy?
Oh yeah.
It could just become something totally different.
Yeah. Now I have to make sure that they're like integrally sound.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, it could totally become something else.
Okay. I have one more tip that I thought of while we were talking.
All right. Hit me with it.
Limit your options. Now this,
but what about dumping everything on the table? Is this different? Right.
Yeah, this is different.
Okay, cool.
So, this is going to sound hypocritical because we have over 200 different bolts of fabric on our wall. And I'm saying to limit your options.
Yes.
But when we do the beginner quilt, people only pick, well, they can pick up to 9. But you're starting, you're not trying to do everything that you like all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be when you're starting this new painting technique that you say, okay, I'm only going to pick 3 colors.
Yeah, I only bought like 2 colors and a white because I was like, I don't know how this is going to turn out.
And so you can limit, if I'm writing an email, I can't write about everything we want to tell people about make do all at once.
Like all the different aspects. You have to say, all right, we're going to focus on the kids here. Or we're going to talk about the adult program or our Zest Friends or whatever.
Yeah. It's like that movie, Everything All at Once. I didn't see it, but I think it was out recently.
Yes. It's about multiverses.
Okay.
Where it's just like different versions of people and different universes. And it's a lot.
So I don't know the movie, but yeah. Just even the title. Is that the title, Everything All at Once?
Mm-hmm. I think it's Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's all of it.
All encompassing. So
I think we try to do that in our art.
Mm-hmm.
I see people do it in the beginner quilting class that they're trying to put everything they love into one quilt.
I want it to match my house, but I also want it to have my favorite color. I want it to be subdued, but I also want it to be whimsical. And it's like, okay, honey.
Yeah, it's too much.
You need to pick like a purpose of this quilt. Is it just for you to have your like an homage to your favorite color? Or is this going to be something you want like on your couch? You have to pick something.
Yes. And so nothing can be everywhere all the time, all at once, yeah. Whatever the title yes. of that film is. And so limit your options from the beginning can help make that. So maybe this is similar to start small, but I think it's about the actual pieces that you're using to do the thing.
You gave me this advice when I was trying to figure out what we were going to do for spring break camp.
Mm.
So I had to figure out like, okay, we could do so many different activities for art camp, but I started to think, okay, there's a lot of new things that we could do, But how can I make this easy on myself? What is stuff that we've already done? Yeah. What are things that we're good at? And that made the planning process so much easier. And even though I'm not going to be doing a ton of new stuff with these kiddos, new stuff to me, it'll be new to them.
Right.
And that's what matters.
Right.
So it can't be all new to me. And that's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be everything.
And it can't be new to you.
Oh, yeah.
Because someone needs to know what the heck is going on. Well,
yeah. I mean, the idea is like, okay, it's new for me. I have to learn it and then I teach it. But like, that takes more time.
Yeah.
And we have plenty of cool stuff that we already do here. So limiting my options to that greatly helped the planning process.
Yes. That was really good advice I gave you.
It was really good advice. Yeah, I've learned a lot about planning since coming here to Make Do. Scheduling, planning, figuring out.
Same. You also have learned a lot because it's your first job like this.
Yeah, I don't know what would have prepared me for this job. Yeah,
so of course you've learned a lot. That's what we're talking about, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you should be learning a lot. Because if you're not, then you're not doing your
stagnating.
Job. And same for me. Like, I feel like just now, I know what my job is. I've been doing this 6 years.
Yeah, but now you know what roles that you fulfill and what you need to give off, hand off to other people.
And how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but I think that doesn't mean I was doing a bad job at Make Do before.
Mm-mm.
It's just now I feel like, oh, this is it.
Mm-hmm. You're not trying to do everything all at once.
Uh-uh.
There you go.
No.
All right. Excellent tips. Loved it. Let's hop into some sweet and sour today.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. What do you want to hear first?
You know what? I want to save the sweet towards the end. Okay. So I want to hear the sour.
I didn't write a sour.
Of course you don't. Oh no. Well, that's good then. I can share you my sour then. How about that? I'll share with you my sour.
Okay.
It's fairly obvious. I'm sick and I would love to, like, I took a sick day on Monday and I was hoping that I would feel better, but unfortunately, like, I'm well enough to be here, but it's like one of those things where I've got sinus nastiness and I am not young. Like, I want to bounce back quicker.
Yeah.
And my body's like, you still need to rest. So it's been this week has been a practice of get up, go to work, come home, eat dinner, and then you need to rest because there's really not much else you can do.
Mm-hmm.
The dishes are piling up. I have things that I need to do, but my body's like, you also need to rest. You're sick. Mm-hmm. So that's my sour. Yeah.
Welcome.
Welcome to life. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think if I have a sour.
That's all right if you don't.
I guess my sour is that I made my little niece the best Valentine present.
What is it?
I can't say.
Okay. You'll have to tell us next week.
Yeah, I'll say next week. But I finished it like a week and a half ago and I only just mailed it today.
Man,
that's my sour. Also, I had to basically build a box because Pip chews on boxes, and I had a box that would be the perfect size, but Pip had eaten basically the whole top off of it. So I grabbed some more cardboard and built a box.
Pip just gave us like the sassiest side eye when you said that. She was like, "Look, you gave me that box."
Yeah. All right. My sour is that I was lazy and only just now mailed it, and that my niece could have had this amazing present for a whole week by now.
That's all right.
Yeah.
She don't know what she's missing.
That's
true.
There
you go. All right. Here's my sweet. I have a lovely student who unfortunately has recently lost her grandmother. Her grandmother made like all of her clothes. And she was like, "Hey, my mom wants to know if you want any of my grandma's older clothes. Like, she wears like sweater sets and skirts." And I was like, "That is basically my entire wardrobe."
Whoa, Madison.
I was like, but I had to like be like casual about it. Yeah. I had to be like,
you had to be cool.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, you know, I'll look through it and stuff. Oh my word. This woman lined everything. There was pockets in everything. I just, it's not only is that awesome? But I also feel very honored that someone trusts me with their grandmother's and their mother's old clothes, because I realize how much sentimental value that has. So I'm going to give these clothes a new home and care for them and enjoy them, because they are clothes. They're not meant to sit somewhere. Yeah.
She's wearing a skirt today.
I am. It's a wool skirt. They're beautifully made. And what is even more incredible is that all of these clothes like fit perfectly. Richard's like, are you sure there wasn't like a time dilation and like you're getting to teach your own granddaughter or something like that? And I was like, as far as I know, I don't have a time machine yet.
Maybe you just don't know yet.
Yeah, maybe it just hasn't happened yet. But it's a beautiful connection that I'm getting to have with my student who now makes her own clothes.
Yeah. Well, and you said that, you know, it's an honor for you, but also how cool for this kiddo and her mom that they have someone to pass the stuff on to.
Yeah. I mean, they thought enough of me. Like, they took the rest of like the tagged stuff that was like from stores to a consignment store, but they thought enough of me to like, hey, this is someone who will get to appreciate the clothes. So I don't always keep everything that people give me. And I always ask, like, if I don't want something, do you want it back? But yeah, I'm very, very blessed and honored to have these.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about that.
Okay. My sweet is January.
Oh.
Let me explain.
I mean, it's February now.
But I just finished our January books and numbers and looking back at January.
Okay.
And it's the best January we've ever had.
Ooh.
We had 71 participants in January. That includes itty bitties, kids and adults. But the thing that is cooler to me is that pay what you can. So the total like discounts that people took through pay what you can was half, 50% of our entire class fees.
Mm.
This, like, typically, well, all of 2022, it was 16%. So what that means is we're finally engaging with people who are paying less, which means we're having economic and social diversity in our classes, which is part of the point.
That's the point of make do.
And, like, that people are feeling comfortable... Pip is dropping her bone everywhere.
Yeah.
That people are feeling comfortable to take advantage of our pay what you can process, and that they're choosing to come to the space. And so that just makes me so happy. That's my sweet.
And it definitely feels like the hard work that both you and I have put in is now, it really does feel like it's making a difference towards the mission that we have.
Yeah.
And that feels good, because sometimes it feels like we do a lot of like prepping and planning so that eventually things will catch on.
Yeah.
It feels like things are catching on.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
But back to what we were talking about today, then there will be a time when they're not, like when we're trying to get, you know, people to catch on. So
yeah,
it is all cyclical, but we're in a good cycle right now.
Yeah. So. We're in a good part of the cycle right now for sure. Okay. Yeah. What I'm learning right now is trying to figure out this whole painting thing.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go back and get some more supplies. I don't feel discouraged. I just know I'm like, there's probably some other things that I need to account for, play some more with like the ratios and different materials and whatnot, and go from there.
Yeah. I am learning it's a web-based app called PreQuilt, and it lets you play around. Like, you can design your own quilt blocks, you can move them around, you can make them different colors. And so I am playing around with that for a new class we're going to do at Make Do that is going to be a mystery quilt.
I do love mysteries.
So
that's why I like chocolate boxes.
Oh yeah,
because you never know what you can bite into.
So Madison was a little confused when she walked in and saw me designing the quilt. She was like, wait, I thought it was supposed to be a mystery.
Like, here's what I thought. I thought mystery quilt was like a type of quilt, like, let's say, like, it's like a set of instructions. Oh. It doesn't come with a picture, but it's like one set of instructions. Yeah. And you just like hand them out and you guide people through it. Yeah. Very much like, this is my Dungeons and Dragons coming out. Yeah. Like, someone hands you a story and you don't know what the story is going to be, but you just like read along and guide people through it. But the premise is that you're designing the quilt. The participants don't know what's happening.
Right. Just like someone designs the Dungeons and Dragons thing you would be working through.
Yes. They know what happens.
Right.
But the...
Yeah, yeah, so I will know what the quilt will look like, but participants won't. And I think it's going to be so fun.
I'm so excited.
But, so I've been learning that app, Prequilt, to plan the mystery quilt.
Yay. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. It'll be so cool.
Well, Pip did good. She mostly stayed on her place. Now she's standing on it and trying to hand me her bone. All right. Well, we did it. We made it through another podcast and another week.
Oh, we're going back to where you sing us out?
I guess. I was singing before we started, and Madison was checking my volume levels, and she goes, can you, like, talk without singing?
Because I needed to check the levels while she was talking.
And I was being too loud, I guess, while I was singing. Oh. So,
yeah. Anyways.
Be as loud as you need to this week.
Yeah.
Sing or don't. Try and something new. We'll be back.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you to my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson, that's Hudson with a T, or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at Make Do Create or on Facebook at Make Do Cersei, and visit our website, makedocreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things.